Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 1-1. 11, Mike. I got it right this time.
Good luck, Danny
Z. He actually flashed me the two ones right before we went on air, so I remembered. Episode 11 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z here with, obviously, my co-host, Michael Shepard, who's always wearing the same WBC boxing shirt.
Just repping.
I'm
looking for that sponsorship.
I know you guys can't see it, but he's always wearing the same shirt. He's a big fan. He's a big fan of WBC, and it's a nice shirt, though. I like it. It is a nice shirt. Where'd you get it at?
WBC website.
Do you really?
I think so.
Oh. Well, thanks for ordering me one. But anyways, so obviously we got a big fight this weekend. Probably one of the biggest fights of the year, or even of the last couple years in terms of heavyweight. But we'll touch on that later, of course. Right now, we obviously have another guest in the building, performance coach. Do you like to be called a performance coach? Andy Aguilar. Mm-hmm. Or do you like to be called a strength and conditioning coach?
Well, that's actually a very interesting subject. It's a lot of combat sports specialists. They're trying to get away from that strength and conditioning moniker because they're trying to categorize it for like football players and also the basketball players. So I guess performance coach is becoming more of a common moniker for us. So mm-hmm. Yeah, performance coach.
That's so good. You prefer that?
Yeah, I prefer performance coach.
And it's a lot simpler to say instead of strength and conditioning, a lot less words out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So... And it sounds a lot more professional, though. Performance coach. Like,
yeah, it does.
Right.
So I'm on board with it. But obviously, Andy, you know, you've been in the game for quite a few years now. Mm-hmm. For the people who don't know, because obviously the head trainers are always the ones that get the TV time, the interviews and stuff. But you guys are an integral part of fighters' camps, especially as they're getting ready for fights. For the people who don't know, tell the people who your clients are, who you train.
Right. So I am the performance coach for currently Super WBA featherweight champion Leo Santa Cruz. He will be starting camp soon. And right now, Jaime Munguia, WBO champion.
Big kid, man.
Oh, yeah. Very, very big guy. Up-and-coming fighters, Panchito de Vaca, Jose Zepeda. He's intercontinental champ for WBA, WBO. And yeah, like we're going to have some more fighters. More fighters will be coming in soon. I have the Comper brothers. They'll be coming in January. But yeah, we're just stacking up fighters under the stable.
How long have you been training Santa Cruz?
This will be his sixth, seventh camp so far. So it's been quite a few years.
The first fight was with Abner Mares at the Staples Center, right?
Exactly. Yes. I literally was almost in a sense got thrown into the fire. It's like, all right, we want you to train Santa Cruz for this fight against Mares. It's going to be for a title. So are you ready? And I'm like, oh okay. That's got it, man. I'm ready for this.
They just found you at the UFC gym there in Rosemead, California, and were just like, hey, you know, we like your work and do you want to jump on the team?
Exactly. Yeah. They just said, yeah, that was just recommended. And they wanted to try me out for a week. And they're like, okay, we're going to just do a trial run for a week for the strength and conditioning camp. And we're going to see how you look and how Leo feels. And we're going to go from there. And they made the decision after a week. Like, yeah, we want you on board and we want you for this fight. I'm like, you got it. I'm ready.
So being a performance coach, are you involved in the weight cut as well?
Yes, I am involved in the weight cut. But that's dependent, obviously, by the head coach. Sometimes the head coach does have a nutritionist already on board. So I always want to wear my hat. The biggest thing is that we want to make sure that we wear our hats respectively. I will never step onto the coach's like toes and be like, oh, yeah, you should have this strategy when coming into the fight. That's not my hat to wear. My hat to wear is a performance coach. But if they want me for nutritional advice, then yes, definitely, I'll be taking my hat in that also with them.
And do you prefer new school methods or, you know, are you kind of like more old school? Like, do you believe in, you know, people doing the saunas or running or just nutrition for people who are trying to make weight?
That's it's a touchy subject because now we're kind of talking about tradition. There's a lot of coaches out there that feel sauna and and running, mm-hmm. all that that's necessary for the weight cut. New school method, we have water loading methods in which we have the fighter consume distilled water and slowly taper out the distilled water to kind of help drop the weight, where almost a sauna is almost unnecessary.
Man.
And caloric control, in which we actually drop weight accordingly without losing too much muscle mass, because obviously excessive amount of running, distance running, will actually deteriorate muscle mass. That's very critical for the fighter to make sure that they are generating the force to be able to perform in the boxing ring. You can only imagine if they've burnt out all or majority of their muscle in that sense, that when they punch the opponent, opponent's like, oh, that's all you got? Okay, I'm just going to walk right through your punch and I'm just going to beat you down then. So you want to make sure we prevent that. And it all starts not only from the performance side, but also making sure their weight cut is healthy. They're not burning out muscle mass and they're getting to their weight class like in a healthy manner, in a performance-based manner.
So what do you think on Tyson Fury losing all of that weight in the past year? Do you think something like that, like a drastic change of what, 160 pounds or so?
I think it was more.
Maybe more. How do you think that'll affect him come fight night?
You see, that's that's more of a different perspective, because obviously with that amount of weight and also from the pictures that circulated, he is considered obese. So we saw a lot of fat mass just melt away from his body. I can't be too specific because I don't know what his nutritional regimen was and his water intake regimen was, but we're going to have...
I hear he did an interview and he said he was keto.
It was a keto diet.
Keto diet, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah, it was on it's on somebody's podcast. Maybe Joe Rogan's.
Oh, okay.
It was on Joe Rogan's. He said he did a keto. Mm. He was just eating meat.
What do you think about the keto diet for fighters especially?
To be honest, all diets in general, keto diet or whatever name diet you want to call it, personally, it's all novelty, but I'm not trying to bash it saying they don't work at all. Everybody's different. There's no such thing as a universal diet. I refuse to believe that. To say the keto diet will work on everyone, I don't feel that's correct, because genetically, we're just all different. We respond differently to different foods, different intakes. And once again, how we kind of previously said, almost the physique too is just different. No one looks the same. If I gave you a workout right now, set by set, and all of you in this room did it for the next 3 months, every one of you will have a different physique, even though you did maybe the same amount of weight,
right,
same amount of reps and same amount of sets, because we're all genetically different. So to say nutritionally, there's something universal that'll work for everyone, I find that very hard to believe. But once again, they do work. They do work for certain individuals.
So you as a performance coach, like you just said, it works out differently for everybody. When you're training someone like Leo Santa Cruz and Munguia, like how do you find out what suits them? Just trial and error?
Are we talking about nutrition or performance training?
We'll say both.
Both, okay. For nutrition, we just need to kind of see what they're consuming at a daily, what's comfortable, because I'm definitely not going to have them consume something they disagree with, because then we're just kind of messing with their gut. They're going to have a stomach ache and not going to feel good when they're training. So it's just really a person-by-person basis. We got to make sure that they're happy with what they're eating, because this is... Yeah, this is combat sports. These guys are getting punched every single day. So we would need to make sure that their stress levels are at their minimum and they're having at least the most fun per day training. Performance training wise, first, it always is coming from the head coach and the fighter. I'm not just going to give them, once again, a universal program that's going to make them great. The head coach might come to me saying, hey, I want this fighter to be faster on his feet. Or I need this guy to punch really hard. Or I need to work on his conditioning. Andy, can you please work on his conditioning? He needs to possibly last past the 10th round, because historically he's never been looking good past the 10th round.
How was Leo's conditioning when you first met him?
Awesome. That dude's a...
I mean, obviously, yeah, he's being a world-class fighter, obviously, you know, it's great. But I mean, like, have you been able to improve him over the years, or is he just naturally just got the talent? I mean, he's got talent, of course, but...
Right. I would say it's both. He's a workhorse. If you see him in the gym, that dude just won't get... He's like... He's 122. He's a 122-pound fighter, and he will push weight around that, like, a 160-pound fighter kind of struggles with. He's dedicated. But to answer your question, he has great conditioning. When he first started camp with me, his conditioning was superb. my job from my perspective was to make sure that he had a higher power output with that conditioning. Before he used to complain that his conditioning was great, he just felt like his punches were stiff. Mm-hmm. Like when he threw the punch, it felt like it was in slow motion. And when it connected, he just didn't feel like it connected solid. I'm like, okay, you have the ability to throw a lot of punches, but you feel there's no impact behind it. You feel they're slow.
Yeah.
So I had to make sure I changed his regimen, the program, to make sure that when he did throw punches, he would throw them with the intention of hurting his opponent. He feels the impact. But at the same time, knowing that he's throwing a lot more powerfully, it's going to drain his gas tank even faster. So I have to increase his conditioning even further because now he's punching harder.
Yeah.
And everyone knows you start throwing haymakers all the time, your gas tank is just going to dwindle down really, mm-hmm. really fast. But not to say that Leo throws a lot of haymakers, but as he punches harder and harder and harder with every single camp that passes, I need to make sure his conditioning is keeping up with that output.
Well, remember the first fight you did, the Leo Santa Cruz Abner Mares was like 1,000 punches.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like Leo is known for throwing a ton of punches.
Exactly.
A ton of punches. So like, you know, I'm sure, you know, from your perspective, you see certain things. Of course, the power is going to go down as the rounds go by. But like, even still, throwing that many punches, like, you know, there's not a lot of fighters that even come close to his punch output.
No, not at all, honestly. Yeah, that's why his conditioning was superb. But like I said, I did not want him to run into a situation where he had that immense amount of volume and one day he faces an opponent where I was like, oh, that's it? That was the hardest strikes you have? I'm just going to walk right through it then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to walk right through and just going to hit you then. I did not want that scenario to be possible. So I made sure every time he had his fury of these little flurries of punches, it's going to hurt his opponent. It's going to make the opponent think twice. Like, okay, I do not want to enter that eye of the storm. Those punches hurt. I'm just going to either move or I have to kind of cover up. I always want that situation to happen.
So you were there too for both the Carl Frampton fights.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how were those fights? Cause I mean, those were obviously competitive fights. Frampton's mm-hmm. really good. I mean, what'd you think about that performance?
The performance for the Carl Frampton fights was great. Carl Frampton is a real great boxer, like great performance with both of them. The very first one, Leo did superb. He just, I'm pretty sure as you read through the media within that fight, he was just a little more preoccupied with his father battling cancer. So I feel that not to provide an excuse for that.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that's more of a slight mental handicap for Leo. So I know he was he was concerned. The father wasn't there for a majority of the camp because I was there. I always make sure I watch all my guys spar.
Right.
And he definitely wasn't there because of the whole process of treatment for his cancer. Now, the second fight against Frampton, the rematch, that's when the father was present. He was there the whole time.
Right.
And yeah, you just saw Leo. He was just a happier guy. He was happy that his dad was there, like guiding him through it. And it reflected within the second fight. He just adjusted well and performed, at his greatest.
Do you want to see, I mean, obviously Leo's mentioned that he wants Gary Russell Jr.
Yes.
And then he said he possibly wants a third match with Frampton.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you want, as a part of his team, obviously, would you want a specific order? Would you want Frampton first and then Russell Jr.? Would you want a unification with Russell first and then go to Frampton?
Me personally, I definitely would like Russell first mm-hmm. for Leo. Why is because it was a very competitive fight against Frampton, but Frampton is now in a great position to acquire another world title because he's fighting in December, actually, correct? For the IBF?
I think so.
Yeah, he's going to be fighting for the...
Isn't he? I think he is.
Yeah, he's fighting for the IBF. Yeah, Warrington. Yeah. There we go.
Josh Warrington. Yes, right. Warrington. Yeah, yes. Come on, Mike. You're an English fan. Come on.
at a blank moment there.
Yeah. I thought you had it for a second. He's all about English boxing. Yeah. So.
December 22nd.
There you go.
Now it's coming back to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he has that opportunity for the IBF title along with a possible matchup against Oscar Valdez for the WBO.
That'd be a great fight.
Man. Yeah.
So I feel, just once again, from taking myself out as a coach, but more as a fan, as a spectator, I would love to see Leo going against Russell. And best case scenario, it's unified with Leo. Leo has the WBA, WBC. And we have the matchup with Carl Frampton, IBF, WBO. Nice. If he wins against.
Man. I see where he's going here. I see where he's going.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
And as a fan, seeing that type of undisputed champion matchup, that would be just something great to see.
Because Leo's pretty cleaned out that division, hasn't he?
Yeah,
he's only really got really big fights left in him.
Yeah, I mean, Russell, Frampton, I mean, what? Who else?
He hasn't really got anybody else.
Anyone else.
No.
No.
I mean, like, there's people like above and below, but...
He could fight, you know, the winner of the World Boxing Super Series when that comes around. Like,
that's,
you know,
true.
If someone, say, Donaire goes on to win that,
yeah,
he can move back up.
True.
Kind of like a legend. I mean, yeah, he fought Carl Frampton.
Because Nonito's fighting at 122, right?
Yeah, he moved down, didn't he?
So...
For the... Sorry, well, he moved down to 118, didn't he?
He's at 118?
Yeah, for the World Boxing Super Series, because he had to drop that weight.
Oh,
and everyone was worried that he wasn't going to make it.
Well, I didn't know it was 118. I thought it was 122.
So.
Wow. But, you know, in addition, obviously, you mentioned earlier, you also trained the biggest kid I've ever seen, Jaime Munguia.
Yes.
154-pound WBO world champion?
WBO champion.
And so you've trained him, what, twice two fights?
This is the second camp right now.
Okay, so you're in the midst of the second camp.
So
what, you know, what's your take on 21-year-old Jaime Munguia?
That dude's a phenom. Literally a phenom. Just for his age and also for his height towards the weight class, he's just one big strong guy.
How on earth does he make weight?
Well, he's young.
that's exactly what you just said. It's because
huge.
He's young.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get to a point. I mean, he knows it's probably better than all of us, but like, he's going to get to a point where, yeah, as you get older, it's going to be more difficult for him to make that weight.
Exactly.
He knows. He knows he's going to have to go to middleweight and possibly even super middleweight as the years go by. I mean, I don't know. How tall is he? Like 5'10"?
He's actually, I believe, he's like 6'1".
Holy crap. Yeah,
he's a very big
So guy. He could go like to, I don't know, maybe even cruiserweight. I don't know. Light heavyweight at least.
That's
up to coach.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, in terms of, like, you know, the trajectory, the age.
Yeah, at that height, definitely.
Yeah. So, but, you know, the first camp was his last fight. Who did he fight last?
He was a co-main event for Canelo and Triple G.
Vegas.
Cook.
Yeah. Brandon Cook?
It was Brandon Cook.
That's right.
Brandon Cook.
Demolished him.
Right. So what'd you think about that performance, especially being that the first camp you had with him?
Oh, it was exciting just to, because Robert Alcazar works with Jaime Munguia. And speaking with Robert Alcazar for the very first camp, his whole thing was that he wanted everything. He just said, I want to – it was more of a test for me in a sense. He wanted to say, okay, here's Jaime Munguia. You have another world champion in your hands.
That's insane.
To see conditioning. I need to see – obviously, Jaime has an immense amount of power. But let me see – he's like, let me see conditioning power. I want to see speed. Let me see what you can bring to the table.
Right.
And I did, and it was a great performance behind me. It was just as you said, a demolishing.
Somebody recommended you to his team? Or how'd that happen?
That happened. That's another interesting story. I don't know if you know Martin Castillo.
The singer?
Yeah, the singer. Mm-hmm. He actually introduced me to Robert Alcazar.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, Robert Alcazar, I just gained his trust. He first started with Panchito. I started acquiring him, did a camp with him. He liked what he saw. I'm like, okay, you know what? You earned my trust with this fighter. I'm going to give you my world champion, and we're going to go from there. I want to see what you do with the world champion. And yeah, kind of just all bloomed from there. But definitely started with Marcus Steele's musician, singer, and introduced me to Robert Alcazar. And from Robert Alcazar, went to Jaime Munguia and also Panchito.
So for the training, are you kind of old school with that, new school? Do you have, is it like Rocky? He's out there cutting down trees, running in
carrying
the snow?
Wood,
or is it more Ivan Drago where he's linked up to computers?
It is very much like Ivan Drago. Yeah, very much like that. Unfortunately, what we see in movies and also what's...
So he's not chasing chickens?
Unfortunately not.
Okay.
Unfortunately not.
I mean,
that would probably be a good training regimen.
That'd be good, it's good agility. For his feet.
Yeah, just to try to catch a chicken right there. But unfortunately, it's not going to get to that point ever. I hope not. Hopefully.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
I'll take suggestions. I'll definitely take suggestions.
That's a freebie for you.
Thank you. I'll give you credit for that. But no, it's all... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it's all actually new school because... that's the thing. We're the sport's evolving. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing. And the biggest observation is we see NFL players, we see the NBA, we see all of these professional sports. Through performance training and strength and conditioning, everything is just advanced and has evolved. Yet, and even MMA evolved. Mm-hmm. They introduced sort of the strength and conditioning component. But we see boxing still within that era of like, we just need to run 5 miles, then we need to hit the heavy bag for 2 hours, then we need to hit mitts for another 2 hours, and that's enough. That is not enough. It might be enough for a very talented individual, I get that, but once we reach that upper echelon of fighters, it's like we need to somehow break away from them. And in order to break away from them, other than renewed strategies, is performance training. We got to get them better conditioning. We got to get them punching harder. We got to get them punching faster. We got to get them to react faster. Now we're looking at more neural functions, cognitive functions, making quick decisions quickly. It's like, should I throw a jab or should I throw a cross? If I slip this punch, I need to throw this punch. And that's all integrated within performance training. So yes, it's very much like Drago. We have, you know, within the UFC Jim Rosebead, I have quite a lot of tools that measure velocity, how fast they're going, how fast the bar is going when they're moving it. Reactional drills with light system that's sensor-based. I have, obviously, heart rate monitors. That's a very crucial one. But technology with science, everything is immeasurable. Everything should be immeasurable. And that's where we can measure their performance and see an increase in performance from all these fighters.
Are you also the Munguia's nutritionist?
No, he actually has a nutritionist right now, but he does occasionally ask me a little bit of advice on how to make his weight cut a little bit easier and less strainful, and I always give my input right there. So I'm always open to giving my advice to all my fighters.
And what would that advice be, just like from a general aspect?
The biggest concern for me is the whole dehydration process. They feel like they need to cut water like 2 weeks in advance, and they do that, but that's very dangerous and also very detrimental for performance. So for me, I asked them, I was like, just switch to distilled water and slowly cut it out. With distilled water, it doesn't really stick to the body as much. When they sweat and obviously when they use the restroom, it'll just completely drain out their body naturally little by little. And I've had my guys cut water completely the day before weigh-ins. They didn't have to do it 2 weeks prior.
Wow. How do you think that affects? Because I know listening to some other podcasts from England, they were saying that they feel that the people who are cutting the water is going to affect the brain because obviously there's less covering around the brain or something like that.
Exactly.
So they were saying that some of the people who have died and, you know, had concussions and stuff like that is from, you know, obviously the lack of water in the build-up to the weigh-in and then the build-up to the fight. And some of them were saying that, I think it was Glenn McCrory, the ex champion from England, was saying that he stepped into the ring and he knew the moment he steps in the ring is like, I'm going to lose this fight.
Damn.
Wow.
Because he just felt he didn't have enough water. He felt weak.
And I don't attest to that, to the dehydration process. I'm going to attest that to the fact that he didn't hydrate properly after the weigh-ins. Because remember, we do have that about, 30 hours? Yeah, almost 30 hours. More than a day to actually rehydrate, recarbohydrate. Just to consume everything that the fighter lost during the whole cut process.
Yeah.
So I definitely attest to that because once they've done the weigh-in, I also have a regimen making sure that they're rehydrating themselves properly, 8 ounces, 8 to 16 ounces per hour, making sure that they are consuming what was lost during the whole cut process. And yeah, it's just attesting to the fact that after weigh-ins, they need to be hydrated and they need to intake all the calories and nutrition necessary to be performing.
Who's better at cutting weight, Jaime or Leo? Who has an easier time? I mean, I'm assuming it's Jaime because he's younger.
It's Jaime just because of the fact he's younger.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's definitely it.
But I mean, you would know better, but Leo seems like he has it's not easy to cut weight, of course, but like, you know, Leo's obviously a disciplined fighter and world champion. So.
Very disciplined. Yeah, it's not difficult at all for Leo to cut weight. He's professional. Like he's always checking his weight all the time, making sure. Like he never wants to miss weight because that just looks bad upon him as a professional. But definitely I know Jaime does have an easier time losing weight just to attest for the age. He's just younger.
And we mentioned how Jaime is six foot one, maybe.
6 foot one or something.
What do we have last week on HBO? Dimitri Bivol and Pascal.
Actually, there was two questions I wanted to ask them before we went on to the review.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to compare the height, because Jaime, like I said, eventually yeah. can get there. But go ahead.
Yeah, just two questions before we move on is, obviously now since kind of Lomachenko's come to the forefront and the Usyk, I see that they've got kind of some different type of training. You know, they do the juggling, they do the
lights. Oh, he touches the lights.
Yeah, the lights on the wall.
That's actually a good question.
They also do like training, and then, you know, when he's kind of like mentally fatigued, he'll go and play chess.
Right.
That's
stuff
insane.
Like that. Because I remember for the Tony Bellew fight against Usyk, a lot of the media turned up for the media workout, and Usyk went into his bag and got out some balls and just started juggling. And all the media were kind of like, what on earth is going on here? Mm-hmm. So can you explain to, you know, obviously the fans and obviously us, you know, like what's the difference in training? Why has that come to the forefront?
That's the new age of training. Mm-hmm. It's more cognitive type training. As I said, we're pretty much evolved from the whole, well, I'm going to grab an axe and cut this tree down to get really, really strong.
So I should stop doing that then?
And probably, yeah. I mean, it'll
chasing probably, chickens in my backyard.
Make it very efficient cutting down trees, though.
You just killed his dream.
Yeah. My bad. Sorry about that. But it really, this is the new age because, once again, boxing is a sweet science.
Yeah.
That's all it really is. And you have to be a thinking fighter. You just can't be out there and just sprawling and throwing haymakers the whole time and expecting to win 100% of the time. So with that case, we need to be implementing training methods for that. And that's where the light system comes in. That's where the juggling actually comes in. Because now we have, you said it was Usyk that was actually doing it?
Yeah.
Now we have Usyk that's doing that whole juggling. So now he's working hand-eye coordination, making reactive decisions. Okay, this ball is coming here. It's approaching this hand, and I'm going to receive it with this hand and transfer it to this hand and accelerate it again.
Mm-hmm.
All that is a process of thinking that's going to translate to boxing when he's in his ring. Because in the ring, you can only imagine, okay, I need a slip here, and I need to somehow find a counter. They're actively finding an open spot to throw their counterpunch in, and that's all cognitive. That's all development that needs to also be trained within the performance aspect, not just through mitts and also shadow boxing. We as performance coaches can also add to that. So the light training, chess, juggling. I have some of my guys, they do, I have a little board set up. It's all numerics, 1 through 50, and it's all juggled around. I tell them, I'd like you to shadow box in front of this board, but I would like you to count out loud 2 through 40, but even numbers only. Just try to find it and count it out loud when you find it. And you see these guys are shadow boxing and they're drastically and like trying to find the number. There's 2, there's 4, there's 6. And it's just fun for them. It's like, oh, where's 10? I fucking can't find 10. Yeah. Like, oh, there's 10. Like, okay, 10, 12, 14. They're actively throwing punches right there. And this trains their cognitive ability to make choices as they're fighting in that sense.
Okay. And then the second question, the last one, I guess, is so Tyson Fury went up to Big Bear to fight up at altitude. So I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about like how he came down because I think he didn't like the altitude or for whatever reason it
was. He says it was planned, but whatever.
Yeah, some people were saying it wasn't. And he went down and obviously he started training with Freddie Roach.
Yes.
So there was a question that was aimed at Freddie Roach about him going up to altitude and then coming down and having the benefits of obviously having the lack, you know,
lack of oxygen
up there. Mm. And Freddie was like, well, actually, he's like, I don't believe that to be true. He's like, that only really works if the fight was going to be altitude, like when Lennox Lewis fought Hazeem Rahman over in South Africa.
Oh, that's right. Huh?
So, which is correct? Will he have the benefits even though he's come down for a week or two and then he fights at, well, be just sea level, I guess, when he fights, obviously.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. So, essentially sea level. And no, Freddie Roach is right. We call that hypoxic training in which there's a lack of oxygen within the training environment, and the body does acclimate. Like you'll develop more red blood cells, and the hormone name escapes me, but there is a hormone that helps with the oxygen utilization efficiency better within the body. But as soon as we leave that high altitude environment, the body will reacclimate back to sea level. But that takes, don't quote me on this, I'm not specifically sure, but it only
takes... It's going to be quoted. It's going to be on the podcast.
Okay. So I'm going to try to be accurate as possible then. It's only going to last for a few days.
Okay.
That's it.
So Freddie was right.
Yeah, that benefit of high altitude training will transfer to sea level, highly oxygenated athlete, but only for a few days.
Mm.
After that few days, is the red blood cell count drops to what is normalized within sea level, and yeah, they lose the benefit of the altitude training after a short period of time.
Dang. That's a good question.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's a good question.
Very good question, yes.
Shut up. But no, you know, going into the reviews, talking about Dimitri Bivol just retained his WBA light heavyweight world championship on the latest edition, the second to last edition of HBO Boxing. Mm-hmm. He beat Pascal, who he should have stopped. He should have stopped, but
yeah.
I mean, what do you think? I think he needed to stop.
He nearly got him out there in the first round, and I think everybody was kind of after his last performance. I think people were hoping that Bivol was going to, you know, take that step up, you know, and stop Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of looked like he could have done it, but he kind of took his foot off the gas. In my eyes,
like he just cruise control.
Yeah, like he kind of thought, like, you know, I've got this. And to me, he should have kind of like stepped it up and actually got Pascal out of there and made a bit of a statement. And it kind of looked like, you know, I think I've got him. And he just kind of took his foot off the gas and kind of just cruised to a unanimous decision.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he needs to be, you know, he needs to be aiming for equaling or bettering, you know, performance by, this is by like Kovalev or Stevenson. Yeah. Because, you know, as soon as, oh, Kovalev's fought Sean Pascal, what did he do? Oh,
Kovalev, he stopped him.
He stopped him. Yeah. So then straight away, what do we do as fans? Okay, Bivol, what did Bivol do? Well, Bivol struggled. He took him 12 rounds.
They do the comparison with these bigger guys.
It's just nature. So, you know, I think we need to do that, especially if he wants those bigger paydays, you know. People pay to see the guys who get people out of there. Yeah. Or, you know, the flashy, they talk good, you know. That's what HBO want, that's what ESPN want, you know, because that's what we're going to tune in to watch. We don't want to see a boring 12-round decision. He's a good fighter. I'm not saying he's not a good fighter, but
he needs to
start getting those finishes.
No, I get it. Yeah. I mean, are you familiar, Andy, with Dimitri Bivol?
Yes, I am.
So, you know, obviously following the win, he expressed interest, and of course he did. There's money there. But he expressed interest in getting the winner of Canelo and Rocky Fielding.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Canelo would be crazy to get in the ring with Bivol. Bivol is more talented than Rocky Fielding.
Right, yeah.
But what do you think about Bivol and then him calling out the winner of Canelo, Rocky Fielding, however realistic it is?
That's just more of it's a business strategy for him. It's just making sure he gets the most money out of per fight, which I understand. Everyone enters this fight business, this hurt business, with the intention of making sure that they are well off whenever they retire, because they're getting hit in the head and they want to be compensated well for getting hit in the head. At least I want to get compensated well if I took on a job where I'm going to get beat up almost every single day.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, they obviously wanted to pair him against Kovalev, and then Kovalev lost against Alvarez. So, I mean, I'm assuming him and Alvarez are going to be on a collision course eventually.
Because that would be, obviously, Bivol would be coming down a weight.
168?
Because Bivol's
175.
What? Yeah, so he'd be coming down to 168 to fight Canelo. And obviously, really, essentially, Canelo would be moving up to 168, because it'd only be his second fight. So it'd be interesting to see how Canelo would do against a naturally bigger guy.
No, Bivol's a different
You know what I mean? Fighter. He's coming down from light heavyweight, and Canelo would be stepping up from Canelo started at, 140 when he started?
Canelo? No, he started at 154.
If that was his first ever fight, was 154?
I think it was 154. Oh. Yeah.
It was still, 20 pounds, 22 pounds.
Well, yeah. But, you know, Canelo's a big kid. But, you know, I like he said, it's a business decision. He calls out, you know, obviously the winner of Canelo Fielding. Like, even if he gets Fielding, if for some reason Fielding beats Canelo, which is unlikely, Fielding now has a name.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He has a name and he's bringing money to the table.
Exactly.
Because especially if he defeated a Canelo. Yeah, Madison Square Garden on, you know,
this win that fight for Rocky Fielding.
Yeah, it is.
Big payday.
It is.
No one expects him to win. And he's obviously fighting Canelo. So it's win-win for him, really.
Yeah. You know, we'll see how the light heavyweight division shapes up as 2019 comes. But, we got my favorite fighter, the Hornet, Jeff Horn. Remember, if you get stung by the Hornet, it's over.
That's it.
I still think he beat Pacquiao. Twice.
The world's most dangerous teacher.
He was. I don't know. A lot of people don't know that. He was
sitting in class. Has everyone got the homework? You'd be like, yes, sir.
Stung by the Hornet. He's fighting this Friday, which was here in the United States is is it Friday morning for us? And Friday night over there? I don't know. I don't know how Australia, because they're fighting at Suncorp Stadium in
Brisbane. On Friday. I don't know what time, but it's on ESPN Plus.
It's on ESPN Plus.
Because of the time difference?
I don't know what the time difference is over there.
I can't do everything for you guys. Do you want to just turn on ESPN Plus and it'll be on there?
Well, I don't know. Like, I'm sure these people are like, oh, I wonder how come they don't know what time. They're going to be like, oh, I heard it on the podcast and I'm going to watch it.
Well, I'm a Brit living in England. So trying to tell me Australian time.
Well, I don't know. You guys are closer than we are, so it doesn't matter. But
did you see the weigh-in?
I didn't. What happened?
This kind of just weighed in, did the face off. Jeff Horn started whispering something to him. Mungia grabbed him by the throat.
Mundine
grabbed him by the throat.
That's a big fight.
Yeah.
Really? Was that today?
Yeah, it was today.
Oh, wow.
Grabbed him by the throat and everyone kind of jumped in. Because there's kind of some bad blood between the two. Mundine's already said that it's probably going to be his last fight, kind of a cash out against Jeff Horn. And then Jeff Horn was kind of respectful actually towards him because he was kind of saying, like, hey, like, I looked up to you when I was coming through as a fighter. But
yeah. Not anymore.
Yeah, Mundine grabbed him by the throat. You know.
What do you think about Jeff Horn, Andy?
I think he is a good fighter.
You think he beat Pacquiao?
Personally, no. I don't think he beat Pacquiao.
I actually thought he did.
Oh, shut up. No, you didn't.
Honestly.
Really?
Yeah, see, if you watched it with the sound off and you weren't listening to the commentators, I just thought looked at them.
Man. I think that's a big indicator. So you have to make sure to sometimes watch these fights without the commentary.
Right, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like I've watched enough fights. Even I don't care what the commentary or not.
He
lost that fight.
He won the fight, but the Pacquiao was more the boxer. Because Jeff Horn just like literally beat him up and threw him around the ring. So if you looked at them both at the end of the fight, you're like, oh, dude, Pacquiao's been in a fight. Look at him. Like,
maybe.
You know what I mean?
Nah, you're trying to discombobulate my brain. I don't agree with that. I think even Pacquiao knew at the end. Like, he wasn't even paying attention to the scorecards and they were taking off his gloves and look at his reaction. There was something going on there. He knows it, but whatever. But the Hornet's back tomorrow, this Friday in Brisbane, Australia at Suncorp Stadium, which is where he fought Pacquiao. That's on ESPN Plus. And then of course this Saturday, the biggest fight, at least of December. Well, if you don't count Canelo, which one's bigger, honestly, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, you know, kind of going through the undercard first. Chris Arreola's fighting Lorenzo Smith. Arreola last fought against Deontay Wilder in 2016 and he lost. He got stopped.
Mm-hmm. Local fighter?
He's a local fighter. He's from out here in Southern California, Riverside, California. And then Luis Ortiz is also on the card.
King Kong
Luis Ortiz. And obviously he fought Wilder last and that was a crazy fight.
That was a good fight.
Ortiz is still dangerous. I don't care who he fights. Yeah. He's still dangerous whether he fights Wilder again, Fury.
He's Joshua. A little bit younger, had a bit more of a gas tank.
Man, I hope one day, has anybody ever asked him how old he is? Like legit?
I think it's like you'd have to cut him in half like a tree and kind of like count the circles. I don't think even Luis Ortiz knows how old he is.
I don't even think he knows, but like that's always been a thing. But he can still fight, man. Yeah, like he's dangerous. He's dangerous. He's arguably.
He's the best person that Wilder's fought.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
And when he caught Wilder in that round, oof. And literally the bell went, like, Wilder nearly walked to the wrong corner. He was kind of like, whoa, where the hell
And he was
am
just
I?
Shaking his head, like, nope, you didn't get me. Yeah. You didn't get me. And that was a fight.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fight.
Great performance. I think Joshua has actually avoided him.
I would avoid him too.
I think, because remember when Eddie Hearn signed him for a little while?
Yeah.
It was like he signed him. Yeah, kind of signed him and paid him, like, hey, like, we'll sign you, but we're trying to keep you away from AJ. Because, you know, AJ's kind of robotic and Luis Ortiz is definitely, I would say, the more natural fighter of the two.
Yeah.
Right.
He's just got the age. That's the problem. He's a lot older.
Yeah. So. I think he's a lot more slick than AJ is.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. He's got the power to hurt you. So he's a slick boxer. He's a Cuban style.
Yeah.
He's Cuban. So, you know, he's not like, you know, like, I mean, look at Lara. Lara's got the Cuban style also too. But, you know, with Ortiz being a heavyweight, he's got that power where obviously he connects. He can take you out.
Yeah. He's a avoided man in that division, definitely.
Oh, yeah. King Kong, but, you know, we'll see. But I think he's going to get at least one more solid big fight against another big heavyweight, whether it's Joshua, Fury, Wilder.
Jarrell Miller. That'd be a good fight, those two.
Dillian White, you know.
Yeah, those two were talking about it a while ago. They were talking about fighting this December.
Oh, they were.
Remember when they called each other out?
Yeah, they were mentioning it.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to happen even when they called each other out. But, you know, next fight on there is a vacant IBF world minimum weight title. We never hear about these minimum weights. You never, and that's what, 102 or something like that? Minimum weight. It's the minimum, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Mark Barriaga versus Carlos Lecona or Lesona. 9-0 versus 13-0. You know, I don't know too much about the guys, but it is a world title fight for the vacant minimum weight title.
Someone's but I mean,
like
these, yeah,
but obviously, like, you know, like with Andy training a guy like Leo Santa Cruz at the lower weight classes, like the punch output's higher.
Yes,
much the higher. Speed's higher, yeah. And I mean, like, you know, a lot, those classes are sometimes a lot more exciting.
Yeah,
you know, because there's more action. You know, sometimes like these heavyweight fights, like when Fury fought Klitschko. It was a big fight, and it was a big win for him. But even Fury says that the fight was boring.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you watch these lower weight classes, like, oh, okay, you're going to see speed. You're going to see the hand, the speed difference in the hands and everything. So I think that's a dark horse fight here. I think it's going to be a kind of interesting fight. I'm looking forward to that. And then Jarrett Hurd, who last defeated Arislandi Lara there earlier this year in a crazy fight in Vegas, which you were at.
I was at, yeah, it was a good fight.
He's putting his titles on the line against Jason Wellborn. And obviously, Jarrett Hurd is in the same weight class as Jaime Munguia.
Yes.
What do you think about that fight, if that fight ever happens?
That would be you're pitting against like two large individuals. And when that happens, you know, it's going to be fireworks. So hopefully that's going to be in the talks very soon, possibly in 2019. And if that does happen, I'll be ready. I'll be ready to make sure Munguia enters that ring with the power to stop him too.
That's a great fight.
Does Munguia, like, does he talk to you guys? Like, you know, I want these guys. I want these big fights. I mean, because obviously there's a promoter differences or whatever.
Exactly.
But, you know, eventually, like, you can't run away from these other high-level competitors. Eventually, you're going to have to fight. It doesn't matter what the promoter politics is. Like, you're going to have to come to a head.
Right.
I mean, does he mention to you guys, like, hey, you know, like, yeah, I want to fight these guys. Hopefully we can make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. Like? He's like, he's young and he's just excited. Like, he's just an example of, like, I am a Mexican warrior. I'm young. I'm healthy. I just want to fight everybody to prove that I am the best. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he wants to unify and he wants to move up. Obviously, there's a lot of talks with him against Canelo. He wants to fight Canelo. He wants to fight Triple G. He's in this profession. He's in boxing to prove that he is the best.
Why do you think what? Because were you with him already when Canelo failed the test and they were talking about Munguia as a replacement against Triple G? Were you there yet?
I wasn't with them, no.
But you were not there yet.
I did hear about all of them.
But, you know, then the Las Vegas Commission, obviously, the Athletic Commission said that, no, they denied that, saying, no, like, you're way too young. You're too inexperienced to fight a guy like Triple G.
And then he went and fought Saddam Ali. And
then he goes and fights Saddam Ali. When he went to world title, and then he's been knocking everybody out since then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think? Do you think he probably should have? Because he's even said, like, it was kind of like a blessing in disguise that he didn't get the Triple G fight, because then he got the Ali fight, he got the world title, and then now he fights like every 2 weeks, it seems like. How many times has he fought this year?
This year, I think this is his sixth fight? Or no, he did five fights or six fights.
I think you're right. I think it's six.
It's six.
Holy what the hell? Holy shit, man. Holy shit. Like, I think is he the most active world champion at the moment?
Oh, yeah, I would so definitely, far, yes.
Right? That's insane. That's insane.
That's what we want to see, though. That's what you want to see out of the champions, you know?
Right.
Especially someone like of his age, you know, because as we were talking before, he's got things that he needs to work on, you know? He got a title early on in his career.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I think he needs to work on his cutting off the ring a little bit, and obviously his footwork. Because he's kind of got that Triple G Mexican sort of style where he just cuts him off, and then he's so big and powerful, he just takes him out.
He just overwhelms you.
I mean, that Jarrett Hurd fight would be in amazing fan-friendly fight.
Yeah.
And that's there's no fancy thing. Footwork in that. They're just going to sit in the trenches and just throw blows.
Right.
And that's two guys. You're going to be watching it, and if you didn't know, you'd be like, this is a light heavyweight fight, right? Because you're looking at them, they're so big.
Seriously.
Yeah. And you're like, no, Dios, middleweights.
Yeah.
But that's actually, light middleweights. Thing, why he likes to fight so often is to get the experience.
Because
he's... So far, he is being written off. Like, he's a little bit too inexperienced. Let him get some experience. That's why I was like, okay, then... In order to counter that, it's like, you know what? I'm going to fight really often just to prove the fact that I am getting this experience in.
Do you know if he had much of an amateur pedigree?
I'm not aware of his amateur record.
That easy?
I'm not sure. It's a good question. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, I think he did. I don't know if it was obviously significant.
Like a Lomachenko, like 300 fights.
I don't think
fights.
Anybody can touch Lomachenko. No.
It's more of
like
a Ukrainian type Russian thing. In
I got to look into it, but I believe he did. But, you know, obviously going to the main event, Wilder versus Fury, lineal champion, heavyweight champion, Tyson Fury versus against the WBC heavyweight champion, Deontay Wilder. And, you know, all the sparks that have been going on this week, all the stuff that's been going on at the press conferences and everything. You know, Andy being in the sport with some, obviously has a couple world champions as his clients. Who do you got?
Ooh, that's completely honest, 50-50 for me. Because you got Wilder that has the punching power. Like, literally, his arm is a cannon.
It's insane.
And you got Fury who just...
Slick.
Yeah, just slick. For a heavyweight, he just moves. Like, yeah. And I don't think Wilder has like faced anything like that. Like someone that just moves smoothly and can just take control of all that ring and just move around.
What do you think?
I'm the same. I think it's 50-50. I think everyone else who's kind of listening is going to be Wilder by KO, or it's going to be Fury on points. Mm-hmm. If Fury can stay away and use that slick movement that he has.
You know what? I'm going on a limb and saying that Fury hits the ground at least once.
So you're saying Wilder wins? Or are you going to say Fury?
No, I
think he could hit the ground, but if he wins every other round,
well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I didn't go further yet, because I don't know.
You're not sitting on the fence telling me in this show.
But I think Fury hits the ground at least once. I think he gets caught and he hits the ground.
I mean, obviously, I'm gonna go with Fury being. In a Brit.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to have
course.
To side with him.
He's always going with those Brits. Doesn't matter.
I'm just worried.
But I like Fury.
I'm just worried that the losing all that weight, like the question I asked,
right.
is how is that going to affect him? That's a lot of weight to lose. Like, has he lost some muscle? You know, like when he gets in there, how is he going to feel? He's had two fights coming back, but they were fights that really were just kind of showcases to get him back out there in front of the crowd. He's never fought. He's literally going from fighting journeyman part-time taxi drivers to fighting a world champion.
But he said in interviews, especially leading up to his fight, that Frank Warren, his promoter, wanted to have him do like four or five fights from his comeback and then get him a big fight with like Joshua Wilder or these big world champions. Mm-hmm. And he at first he was on the, they were in agreement. And after two fights, he told Warren, he's like, you know what? Make the Wilder fight. And they're like, what? No, not yet. He's like, no, do it. I'm ready. Like, let's just jump into it. So they made the fight. And I was even surprised. I was like, holy crap. Like, I don't know. I keep changing my mind. I'm 50-50 just like you guys. I am. But like, honestly, one day I'm like, I think Fury's going to take it. And then I see an interview with Wilder. I'm just like, oh, damn, you know, I think Wilder's going to take it. I don't know.
I do wonder whether Wilder's going to surprise us all. Do you remember that? That one round he had against Benin Stavern, the second fight, where he just came out and he was literally just throwing like the 1-2, 1-2.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, it was like windmills. He's obviously known for the windmill shots.
And I did wonder whether he's going to come out and he's going to try to box more. You know, because obviously he was an amateur, you know, bronze bomber because he got the bronze medal. So I'm wondering whether he's going to surprise us all and be like, hey, you know what? Fury's going to expect me to come out here throwing bombs. So I'm going to come out and I'm going to try and box.
Yeah.
Could be a possibility.
You know, and Tyson Fury, he can fight both ways. He can fight orthodox or southpaw. Is he going to kind of surprise us and be like, you know what? I'm going to come out, I'm going to do southpaw. You know, just to try and throw us all off because.
Maybe.
You know, we're all going to be expecting one thing. So you're going to be training for that. Is one of them going to throw a curveball? But if Wilder tries to outbox Fury, then probably not the brightest idea because that's what Fury's best at.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting. It's definitely one of those ones where you think,
I'm excited.
I'm going to pay the money because you want to see what does happen.
I'm excited. I just hope, you know, that the hype is there. Because even Fury said, he's like, honestly, it could be a boring fight because of my style. Like, he admits it.
Right.
Yeah. Like, he knows it. He's like, that's just how I fight. But I think that just with Wilder essentially knocking out every person he's ever faced in his professional career, I think there's going to be fireworks. There has to be.
Just say it, Danny Z.
You know what? I think I'm going Wilder, man.
Okay.
I think I'm going Wilder. But tomorrow I might change my mind. So if I change my mind, I'm going to text you. But on the record right now, I'm going Wilder. You know what? I think it's going to stop him. I'm going to say 10th.
Okay. So you say Wilder wins. Do we see Wilder and Joshua April? April 13th?
I'd be stupid not to. Right. I mean, Wilder's going to have to go over there. Mm-hmm. They're going to sell out Wembley Stadium, 80,000, 90,000 seats. I mean, Wilder obviously has shown when he went over there for the Fury press conference, all these fans, because obviously the boxing scene over there, they know their fighters, especially their heavyweight fighters. And he was all about it when all these fans rushed him and they were like, oh, Wilder. And you could see it in his face. He was, because they don't look at him like that in the United States. He should be way bigger in the United States.
Did you see Tyson Fury walking around LA?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so he was just stopping random people like, hey, do you know who Deontay Wilder is? And all these people were like, no.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
And what, wow. LA's full of banners and stuff like that because the fight's in LA.
Like, wow. I'm telling you, Fury's in his head. Yeah. Fury's a mind game guy. Yeah. Like, I think he's in his head, especially after the press conference. Was it today or yesterday? Fury's in his head. So, but yeah, when I saw that video where he's just walking around LA with his team, he's like, excuse me, do you know who Deontay Wilder is? And they're just like, who? He's like, thank you. And he just keeps walking. So, I thought it was kind of funny. And then like, more people kind of knew who he was. Like, there's a guy who walked by and he was just like, excuse me, do you know who Deontay Wilder is? And the guy's like, oh, yeah. He's like, no, it's not me. And then he's like, oh, my name's Tyson. He's like, yeah, Tyson Fury. And then he gets all excited. Yeah, he knows who I am. It's pretty funny, man. Like, you know, he's definitely trolling him hard. I think it's getting to Wilder because obviously after today's press conference, you know, Wilder was talking about like, you know.
Did you see the one with Radio Raheem?
Oh, yeah. He was in his face and
crazy.
Talking about race and 400 years of this and just like, dang. He got in his head. He got in his head. But, you know, let's see if he got in his head enough for it to affect him on Saturday.
Do you not think, though, if Wilder wins, that either Wilder's camp or Eddie Hearn will try and keep them away from each other, the AJ and Wilder? Because I don't know who to believe. One of the camps is not trying to make this fight, you know. If you're from England, everyone's like, oh, it's Wilder, you know, he doesn't want any of it. Then over here, everyone's like, oh, it's Eddie Hearn. He's trying to, save.
Man. I honestly think that Wilder obviously has more to gain by fighting Joshua.
Yeah,
right.
And Wilder's just like, let's just do it. But obviously Joshua's a cash cow.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you know, like anybody, like Canelo, like there's protection there. You exactly. know, when you get to that level, you can kind of pick whoever you want. So
because, you know, we talk about it all the time. Top rank, they want to fight inside. They want to fight their own fighters. Well, yeah. So Dylan White's fighting the 22nd against Chisora. Should really win that. So, you know, I would have my money on, you know, Dylan White is going to fight AJ in April.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then maybe towards the latter half, it's winner of Wilder Fury versus Joshua.
Yeah, yes. That's what I think. But I can see happening.
You know, talking about top rank really quick, Jesse Magdaleno, is former 122-pound champ, is coming back in February at 126 pounds, which is the same weight as Leo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would you like to see Magdaleno against? I mean, obviously, Magdaleno's coming off a setback. He lost to Isaac Dogbo. But, you know, a battle between two Mexican-Americans like Mares and Santa Cruz and Magdaleno, would that work?
Oh, definitely.
Especially in L.A.
Yeah, once again, personally, I'd love that fight because culturally you see two Mexicans in a ring, they're just going to battle it out like hard. Probably not, maybe not as much boxing, more kind of fan-pleasing type fighting, but still it's fan-pleasing. Everybody wants to see that. They either want to see someone put down or hurt. Or just a lot of just brawling, a lot of punches being thrown. But by the end of the day, it's the team's choice because Leo definitely has a set plan, as we mentioned. He wants to fight. He's going to get through this fight in February. Then he wants to either target Ray Russell Jr. or Carl Frampton, either or. Then the next fight will be the latter prior.
Right.
And from that point on, we'll see what Leo and the team wants to do.
And Abner Mares is moving up to 130.
I can't wait for this fight.
To fight Gervonta Davis in February, right?
Yeah, February.
In February. So, like, I don't know, man. I think Mares loses that one. I think Davis is just too strong of a kid.
It's one of those fights, though, I think. It just depends.
Davis has a killer instinct.
Yeah.
But which is it? Davis is kind of like Broner now. Those two are hanging around together. It's like, what? Which one turns up? Does the uber professional, fit, raring to go Davis? He's skillful. He's a natural. Actually, skillful he's guy. He's a great boxer.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the problem is, he hangs on with Bronan. He's now struggling to make weight. He lost his title because he struggled to make weight.
That's true. Could be a mental thing.
Yeah. So it's like he needs to take it seriously. That's his problem. It's a great fight, though. You know, those two have been all over Twitter, all over Instagram. you know, doing the social media thing, going back and forth. It's going to be a local fight, I believe, as well. It's going to be in LA somewhere, Staples Center.
Hopefully.
That'd be awesome.
The Forum, one of those three I hear. So
I'm excited for that. But, you know, wrapping up here, we'll talk about Mike's favorite fighter, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., was supposed to be on the Wilder Fury card. And then earlier this week, in a press release from PBC, and I'm surprised they even did it, because when I saw the email, I was like, damn, they straight up called him out, like, where they said Chavez Jr. is no longer going to be on the card because his father, Chavez Sr., felt he was not ready. It's like, damn, you called him out like that? Like, I was surprised by that. You know, they could have said, oh, you know, he had to pull out for personal reasons, you know, whatever, and be like, oh, okay, well, whatever. You know, it is what it is. Like, people would have still criticized him, but they said, like, nope, daddy said, you're not fighting. Dang, that sucks.
There's never a dull moment with Chavez Jr. Is it a few months back? Oh, he's going to be fighting Maravilla. It's coming out of retirement, and he was supposed to be fighting him, and then he was fighting Angulo, was it?
Jaime Munguia could eventually fight him. I'm thinking about height, you know, and Munguia, you know, a couple years down the line, and then Chavez Jr. maybe at 168.
I think Munguia would demolish him, to be honest. Yeah.
Even now?
Yeah.
Yes. I support that.
Chavez Jr., his head's not in it. He's made some money. You see him in Vegas drinking and stuff like that. He's not 100%.
You think Munguia, like, if they told him, like, hey, you want to fight Chavez Jr. at 168, you think he would do it?
Oh, yeah. That's Jaime. He'll take any fight. I'm like, yeah, sure. That's a fight.
For his fans and for, you know, to get those Mexican fans on side, that would be an amazing fight. That'd be like passing the baton, you know?
Exactly.
Like we were talking about earlier.
That's true. That'd be cool, though.
I think Munguia would just walk through him.
I think it'd be exciting either way.
Right.
Yeah.
Two Mexican fighters, you know, some of the most notable names in the sport at the moment. And I mean, Chavez Jr. Obviously you can make money with him because of his name. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for Munguia, it would work.
Yep.
So it's a business decision at the end of the day. but, you know, we appreciate Andy coming, stopping by the studio, coming out on the episode 11 of The Last Round. And if you want to plug whatever you got, social media, anything you got coming up, your fighters' fights coming up, go ahead. The floor is yours, man.
Oh, yeah. I got Leo Santa Cruz. He'll be fighting in February. Jaime Munguia, January. Also check out Jose Cepeda. He'll be fighting in January too. Check out Panchito, part of the stable. And check out the management team, 29 Management.
Do you guys have social media accounts or anything? Or
at 29 Management LLC.
At 29 Management LLC. And if you just want to follow me, it would be the_Fitsmith. And yeah.
And then we got, he doesn't have a mic right now, but we got one of the best photographers in the game right here, Luis Mejia. Social accounts is what? El Mejia Photography. And that's on Instagram, to Twitter as well. Mm-hmm. Are you on Facebook? I don't know, El Mejia Photography. You know, he's shot for a bunch of different outlets. He's shot for PBC at their events, and he's done, you know, photo shoots for them. So
Mega Bechal. Is it the Bichot fight? Carlos Morales, Jaime Munguia.
So he's been all over the game, and he's still going. So, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen his work out there, and you guys just don't know who it is. But his the names are always at the bottom, just in the corner and stuff like that. But like I said, you know, we appreciate you coming by, Andy. You're more than welcome to come by anytime you want. Bring your fighters. Bring Leo. Bring Jaime.
Oh, yeah.
I speak Spanish, so if he's, you know... If he's afraid to, like, oh, well, I don't speak English, like, you know, I speak Spanish, he's going to just have to be afraid of this guy.
I'll miss that episode. I don't even really speak good English, never mind Spanish.
I know, they can't even understand him in English.
Yeah.
But you got last word, Mike?
Obviously, follow us, like I say, every week on iTunes. Give us some reviews. Obviously, the more reviews we get, the more ratings we get, the more visibility we get. And I just say to Andy, if you ever need me to come show Leo to catch chickens or chop down trees,
you got him, man.
I'm available. No, Louis, you can come take some photos of me and Danny chasing some chickens around the pen.
I'll be taking notes.
I'm telling you, it's going to happen.
For a big guy, I've got fast feet.
Hey.
Yeah. I'm telling you, one day we're going to see Leo on All Access Showtime. He's going to be chasing chickens like, son of a bitch. Yeah.
That's my idea. Yeah.
See Lomachenko and Usyk fight. I'm like, that was mine. What the hell, guys?
Yeah.
You can cut me in on some of that.
Yeah. And the next episode is just going to be him venting.
Yeah. I'll be there with that Mickey, like with the hat on and stuff like that, from Rocky.
I'll tell you. But yo, once again, you know, appreciate your time, Andy. Thanks for coming by. You know, like you said, follow us on social media, at The Last Round 12, Twitter, Instagram. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all that. And we'll see you next week after the Wilder Fury fight to see what happens. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.